You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal.
You're listening to CJLO News. Quebec has tabled a bill seeking to expand its secularism laws. If it passes, Quebec will ban public prayer, extend its religious symbols ban to daycare workers, stop public institutions from exclusively offering food based on religious traditions, such as halal or kosher meals. It will phase out public subsidies for religious private schools, and it will see an end to the use of religious symbols in communications by public institutions. For example, graphics or photography used by a municipality will no longer be able to depict a woman in a hijab. It will also see the banning of prayer rooms in schools, including in post-secondary institutions like Concordia and McGill. All of this requires the repealing of Quebec's Freedom of Worship Act, which the bill would accomplish. Many groups are concerned that these restrictive policies infringe on freedom of expression and religion and target minority groups in Quebec. Concordia's Muslim Students Association says that the prayer room at Concordia University is an important gathering place and is visited by at least 500 Muslim students every day. Shaheen Ashraf is a board member for the Canadian Council of Muslim Women here in Montreal. She says these proposed changes target the Muslim minority specifically.
I have contributed to society by the grace of God in a good way all the time, and I cover my head, and nobody has a problem with that, you know, except the government just creating rules for nothing. I mean, they create problems for things that don't exist or matter.
Ashraf says much of the issue comes down to the very definition of secularism held by the CAQ party, a party which is slipping in the polls and will likely struggle to face re-election in the coming year.
I mean, define secularism to me. What is secularism according to your belief? To me, today in Quebec, the secularism is like another religion that is being forced down our throats.
For Ashraf, though, the root of these policy proposals comes down simply to xenophobia and racism.
It is the fear of the other. You don't know me, and you think, oh my gosh, she covers her hair. She covers her head. She looks very different to me. She has brown skin. I don't want her here, you know? And of course, the leaders are encouraging that.
For CJLO News, I'm Adam Innes.
Welcome to North-South Hockey on CGLO 1690 AM. I'm Avery Beaumont, and I'm joined by Will Shukri. We are two hockey reporters, and we could not be more different. I'm an American, I'm gay, he's Canadian, and not gay. So we turn into a Three Stooges routine sometimes when we talk about this sport, so we figured we'd make everyone else listen to it. So we're an NHL show. And we're going to be unpacking the headlines of this week. How you doing, Will?
I'm doing great. I feel really good that I've got to benefit from free healthcare my entire life. And I'm the only one in this room who can say that. But at the end of the day, we might win.
We'll see about that. Well, winning, that's a bit of a question because on the mind right now because of the Olympics. Last night, there was a big headline about Pete DeBoer talking about the ice rinks at the Milano Olympic Complex for the 2026 Winter Olympics. They had to send a squad to go inspect them as they were worried it was not up to NHL standards as construction had been delayed. And it looks like that is the case. Apparently, the rinks are 3 to 4 feet shorter than NHL regulation size. Thoughts?
Yeah, this is a huge problem, right? The biggest story coming out of Four Nations was that we've never seen a group of hockey players as skilled as this. And the biggest story was they didn't have room on the ice. Here we've got a rink that is...
Here we've got a rink that is 3 feet too short, right? And you hear some people talking about the international-sized rinks. The international-sized rinks are bigger than NHL rinks.
Yeah.
They're wider, right? This is going to be the same width of an NHL size rink and 3 feet shorter. So a full meter shorter. When you have the best players in the world flying at 40 kilometers an hour, they don't have the space. And then quality of ice becomes an issue as well. What does the NHLPA do here?
I don't know, because I feel like it's too late. It's December. The games are in February. You can't just suddenly pull out. Oh, my God. It's such a nightmare with the IIHF. Like, that is already – it's such a delicate, like, negotiation that's been worked out over the course of years that I can't imagine – you know, I see a lot of people saying, like, they're not even going to go because it's not safe. And I don't know if they can even do that from a legal standpoint. And what is the alternative then? Are you going to just send a bunch of guys to Long Island to, like, putz around and try to, you know, appease Lou Lamoriello and give him an all-star game again?
Yeah, I think that fans don't want the all-star game. I think that we're, after the Four Nations, that was the most exciting hockey any of us have seen in years.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I don't think anyone wants to go back to the dark ages of the all-star game and the skills competitions where nobody cares. But at the end of the day, safety needs to be the first focus, and the second focus, unfortunately, is going to be the monetary side of things. And if you have every single best player on the planet now opening themselves up to injuries that wouldn't happen in their regular day-to-day lives as NHL players, we might have a problem with the NHLPA, and we might have a problem from the players. I mean, I can't imagine what it would feel like to be Connor McDavid right now. The biggest thing you want in life besides your Stanley Cup is an Olympic gold medal.
Yeah.
Are you willing to sacrifice your career playing on unsafe ice, on a rink that you've never played in before, on an ice size that you're not comfortable with? Are you going to take the risk?
Well, the thing is, these are hockey players we're talking about at the end of the day. Like,
that's
you
a
say
good point.
You say safety is the primary concern. Is it, though? Like, is it? Because, I mean, the league has got to be – obviously, the PA is going to have their own perspective, and Marty Walsh has done some incredible work there in his short tenure. And definitely, I imagine he's going to be all over this issue. But I do think the league cares about – this is going to be so much money for the NHL. It's going to be so much money. And I just can't imagine that they would want anything to get in the way of that. And then, moreover – all of these players haven't been able to play internationally for years. You're not going to take that away from them. They're going to find some resolution, whether it's like, I don't know, whether, you know, they come to some agreement and maybe can they even host the games elsewhere? Who knows? That might be an option. I also think this is going to be really interesting if nothing is resolved and they are just going to have to play on these smaller rinks. How does that affect the roster composition? Because the teams are still sort of finalizing things. You know, there's a lot of guys really gunning for their spots, making a case for themselves. But it's like, oh, do you take Matthew Schaefer now? Do you take Matthew Schaefer now when this is the circumstance?
Yeah, and in the Four Nations, we've talked about this at length privately.
Yeah.
And the historic style of these national teams, right? We saw Canada commit to a heavier lineup in Four Nations as opposed to going all speed, I think. And if the ice is 3 feet shorter, I think we might see similar ideas from all of these international teams, that they might focus on the size a little more than they would have if they had a bunch of space out there.
So very sorry, Seth Jarvis, you've been cut. Travis Konecny, I'm so sorry. No, it's that's what kills me, though, is because I want to see I don't want this to be like an Olympics marred by – I have a gymnastics background, and we always call them asterisk Olympics when like one of the teams would not – like would be boycotting because of the Cold War or something like that. Like the results from that don't really count because not the best – athletes weren't present at those games. And I worry about that with hockey, where it's like, I don't want an asterisk Olympics where not necessarily all of the best talent that is out there is taken because they're worried about them getting hurt, or they're not like, they're just not big enough. They don't play the particular style that this random rink in the middle of Italy necessitates. I am very curious. I definitely think it's going to edge out players who are less physically inclined that were already on the fence. Like, if this is the case, I do not see Adam Fox going for Team USA. Although I didn't really for a while, but I got in a huge argument with my little brother about that. Don't mess with 20-year-old boys from New York, I guess. So Olympics are in the conversation. Would you have any hopes for Team Canada? Are you gunning for anyone to still make the team?
I think the door. I'm a Habs fan, guys. Listen, this is this is CJLO
disclosure
over
biases.
Here. This is absolutely. I have no shame in being a Habs fan here. We're in the right. We're in the right spot. We got the right audience. Nick Suzuki. I think this might help him and not
really?
Hurt him. Yeah. Nick Suzuki's been struggling with an upper or lower body injury for most of November. He's been a little slower, and he's been focusing on that two-way game. I think that might be what Canada's looking for. Looking for a player who isn't necessarily on the ice just to score points every shift. Nick Suzuki's a guy who can play a role for Team Canada. And I don't know how many stars are able to play a role. Although, once again, these are hockey players, and this is a national tournament. Normally, they're pretty good at dedicating themselves to a role.
The problem is that it's John Cooper's team at the end of the day, and he's already got Anthony Cirelli and Brandon Hagel, so, I don't know.
Cooper's also not a fan of Nick Suzuki's.
Really? Would you say
Nick
that?
Suzuki, he chose to remove himself from the last two Team Canada events to try and keep that Iron Man streak going, which he still has, for the record.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I think this issue's not going to be so easily resolved as, oh, well, the ranks aren't good, the league's not going, because this is such, a political thing. It gets so, Suzuki has been left off of all these rosters because he didn't go to Worlds.
Yeah.
It's all these, weird, succession-esque and, political weird beefs. I'm interested to see how this impacts stuff, and I'm not... I have to say, all you can do is laugh. That's what I do mostly with hockey, is I just kind of laugh at the stupidity of it. But when they said they were sending a delegation in November to go and inspect the rinks, I was like, you guys probably should have sent one a long time ago. I don't know if there's going to be much. This is your final finishing touches of okay, great. The facilities are physically working. This is not the we need to go back to the drawing board stage of inspection. So I don't know what they were thinking, but... Well, we'll have to see. Speaking of bigger league safety issues, there's a story this weekend that the NHL sent a memo to players reminding them that they must wear helmets during warmups if they began playing during or after the 2019 to 2020 season. This came after the New Jersey Devils all wore baseball caps to celebrate Brendan Dillon's 1,000th NHL game. And you also said the Sharks just racked up a tab.
A serious tab. I believe the number was $40,000 or $50,000 of fines, because it's $5,000 per player that breaks this rule. And obviously the San Jose Sharks, they're a bunch of 12-year-olds.
Oh, yeah, that's a daycare center.
Yeah, it is. And listen, the Habs are the youngest team in the NHL. Somehow the Sharks are still younger. Everyone is 12 years old. So everyone went helmetless, Celebrini, Smith, Eklund, the whole crew of kids, and they racked up... $50,000 of fines. Although, to be clear, when you pay a fine to the NHL, it gets donated to charity. It doesn't just go to the owner's pockets.
It goes to the player's assistance fund. So at least it does go somewhere that's meaningful and related to why they're getting fined in the first place. I gotta say, though, I feel like this rule has been very loosely enforced for a while now, because I have seen so many photos of Will Smith just flying with that Princess Diana hair streaking behind him. So I don't know. I'm like, he's 2 years old. Why? Who's letting him unsupervised running around?
Do you think he's just paying it every time?
I mean, on that salary, sure. He did. Funny story with Will Smith. One time he was at some kind of, I guess it was a Coldplay concert or something, and there was some fan there selling like friendship bracelets, and clearly a Sharks fan. He went up to them, and they ended up buying bracelets. But I remember the funny thing was he started haggling the fan. Oh yeah, I'll buy a friendship bracelet. Can I do five for $5 instead of one for five? And it's just whatever these athletes spend their salaries on is of the greatest interest to me.
And we're going to do a quick show promo for you guys here. So you're listening to CJLO, and we never introduced our show.
I did. I said North-South Hockey.
Did we?
North-South Hockey. Clock it.
North-South Hockey. Clock it every Wednesday at noon. Once again, listening on CJLO.
That's from local legends Amory and Girl with Dream. Doors at 8 and show at 8:30. Tickets are $12 in advance on thepointofsale.com and $15 at the door.
Well, we might have some beautiful technical difficulties with the show promo, but I'll just say it out loud. Go shop Heaven for Real. Thank you very much for the sponsorship.
All right. So, other news this week in the NHL. Got some not fun news that we can unpack. Vegas Golden Knights goaltender Carter Hart made his debut back in the NHL after nearly 2 years. Hart has been on suspension as he was indicted on charges of sexual assault. He was acquitted as part of the Hockey Canada trial this summer. And the NHL agreed that players are allowed to rejoin the league as of December 1st. So he made quick timing of it. It was unfortunately, like, you wish it could be like, oh, and he was terrible because he just went on a conditioning stint in the NHL or the AHL where he was not putting up a lot of numbers.
He was bad.
It was bad. But look, we got one joyous moment last night in that he did turn the puck over directly to none other than Chicago Blackhawks forward Tyler Bertuzzi, who, by the way, what's going on with that guy? Like, he's having a Cinderella story. It's crazy. But that was very cathartic because Bertuzzi did then immediately score on him. So, yeah, there was a lot of mixed emotions surrounding that. There were plenty of fans protesting Hart being allowed to rejoin the NHL, signs at the rink, you know, saying, believe survivors, this kind of stuff doesn't belong in our sport. Obviously, people still have strong emotions, even though Hart was acquitted. You know, people have argued, like, different perspectives. So I definitely recommend checking out the sinbin.vegas, which is a Golden Knights website. They put together a series of interviews with sexual assault survivors, you know, with regard to this case and with regard to Hart coming back. Recommend you guys check that out. But yeah, it's dark for some hockey fans right now to engage with this sport. Rick Westhead from TSN also just put out a book called We Breed Lions, which is a huge unpacking of the abusive culture of the junior system, and incredibly relevant to the NHL today. This is the system that all of these athletes go through in childhood. And it changes something, you know. I don't know. Have you had any thoughts about this and this whole situation with Hart coming back?
I don't even like my thoughts on this because I think that the NHL really got put between a rock and a hard place here.
Yeah.
I think it was pretty much unanimously agreed upon that that the stories that came out happened. Believe survivors. But unfortunately, when they're acquitted by the legal system, it weakens the NHL's ability to go carte blanche here, right?
Yeah.
Do I think that Carter Hart deserves to be in the NHL? No, I don't. I don't think that he should be in the NHL. But unfortunately, goalies are hard to come by, and he does not have a criminal record. He was acquitted of the crime. I think they were put between a rock and a hard place. I think Vegas made the wrong decision. I want to be so clear. I think that this should have been a moral decision for these GMs.
If you have to put out a PR statement, like, explaining why you signed this player, you probably shouldn't sign the player.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. If you think that it's gonna rock your fan base or that you need to dedicate serious amounts of time justifying this move, you probably shouldn't have made it. And that would be my thoughts on the Carter Hart fiasco.
Yeah, I do understand what you're saying of, like, it's a rock and a hard place because it's a PA decision.
By law, he's an innocent man.
It's a PA decision by the end at the end of the day, and also, so much of this sport works with precedent, and they had to set that precedent of, you know, like what my example that I always go to is, what if in like 5 years, God forbid, like a black player is stop and frisked and accused of a crime he did not commit and like profiled. And then, you know, they go to trial, they are acquitted, whatever the severity of it is. Do you then say, oh, no, you can't play because you were even like thought to have done this? So you can't just, we can't go around saying like, oh, yeah, like we're going to ban these players across the board just because they were like alleged to have done something. At the same time, this case is so, like, the details from this are so harrowing and so specific, and acquittal does not necessarily indicate innocence. I believe I'm legally okay to say that.
You are, yes.
But, you know, so it's I think it's tough for a lot of fans, especially a lot of female fans, a lot of gender diverse fans of hockey, which do exist, by the way, and we will be getting into that a little bit later in the show. But I do want to turn things over to Will, diehard Habs fan, and let you go off about your boys so we can move away from the darkness and maybe some hopefully light of the youth. That was corny. I'm sorry.
This isn't going to be that positive. The Habs have been a mess. The Habs have been a mess. So the Habs played Ottawa last night. They took a beautiful loss once again. And the goaltending was probably at fault, if we're being honest. But I don't want to focus on the goaltending because everyone else is. So I don't want to be everyone else here. I want to talk about the defensive
systems. You're not like
other
girls. I gotcha.
Exactly. We're seeing a lot of poor tracking from forwards in the D zone. That's my biggest problem right now. The hybrid defense system that Marty St-Louis tried to employing is gone now. He's gone back to a standard man-to-man, and it's still it's still not great. We're seeing the downsides of that strategy. In the hybrid strategy, you saw players get lost. Here, you see players lose the switch, right? So they have a huge trouble switching the F1 down low. F1 always ends up losing his man in the corner. We saw this with all four forward lines last night, all four of them. And Nick Suzuki was F1 in three of these instances. One of them resulted in a goal. I'm not a coach. I'm not their coach. I can't fix things. I can just sit in this chair.
Come on,
chair.
Suit up. They need you.
I can just sit in this chair and talk about it, right? They know that it's a problem. They're going to keep working on it. It needs to be fixed if goaltending is going to be an issue, right? If you're going to have a slightly porous defense, you need a goaltender who can make the saves. And right now the Habs have a porous defense and statistically the worst goaltending combo in the league.
Really?
Yeah, if you go by the advanced statistics that everybody loves, goals saved above expected, high dangerous scoring chances. Yeah, it's bad. Yeah. The Habs goaltenders can't make any saves in the slot right now. And cover a puck. You talk about Carter Hart throwing away loose pucks. Samuel Montembeau, he's scared of it. But I'll switch it to something that you can attack onto a little bit. Lane Hutson last night won the physical battle against Brady Tkachuk. Every single time they matched up. And we're going to get a social media going for this show at some point. I've got a clip that I'll release from that, and I'll show it to you after. But Lane Hutson absolutely dumped Brady Tkachuk twice last night, and it was beautiful to see. He's too small for the NHL, apparently. You know, he can't play. He's too little. He's a what would you call him? A Victorian child?
Yeah, I think I've said Victorian orphan who, like a porcelain doll who wished to be real, you know, like a Pinocchio situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I am a big advocate of do not assume that smaller means less physical. That is absolutely not the case. There are plenty of guys historically who have been shorter, who have been quite physical. I think right now, you know, the number one that jumps to mind is like Connor Garland. He's known for being stirring the pot. And you don't have to have the height or the weight necessarily. You just have to know where to place your limbs at the end of the day. Even guys who play the body like Rempe don't know how to do that. So, no, I'm happy to hear that about Hutson because he's just – like the Canadians, like you can't not root for them, I think. Like I'm
at least not here.
Oh yeah, no. I'd be drawn and quartered in the street. But by birth, a fan of the New York Rangers. I'm so sorry for what Chris Kreider has done to the city. My sincerest apologies. We'll get into, we could get into that at some point in the series of the show, but so you would assume that I would have every reason to strongly dislike the Montreal Canadiens, but they have some of the most interesting players. Demidov, I don't know if you have gone on long, long rants about how we've never seen a player like Ivan Demidov in the history of the NHL.
Whoa. I said the Habs haven't seen a player like Ivan Demidov.
Okay, you were really chirping him, or pumping his tires, right?
I'll die on that hill. The Montreal Canadiens have not had a more talented player wear the bleu blanc rouge since Guy Lafleur.
We're getting into hot takes first episode. Okay. I can't
put me on the internet. Clip me.
I can't believe that. Ken Dryden. Oh, wait. I can't use that. I can't make that joke. That is too soon. About to say someone found dead in a ditch. Well, anyway, rest in peace. moving on.
It's okay. We both own Ken Dryden's book. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. But put some respect on his name is all I'm trying to say here. Don't leave him out to dry.
This is fair. I said player, though.
Do you not count a goalie as a player? As a skater?
It's
you
semantics.
Can say. Oh, okay. No, I love watching this team because they always, like, even if they're having like these, I think it's good to go through a downward streak now. Get it out of the way in November, December. Get like the bad juju out of your system because you don't want to have this problem come April. You don't want to be like, oh no, we're fighting for a wild card spot. Like you don't. There was a great quote from Peter Laviolette when the Rangers were like the year they won the President's Trophy and they were doing quite well. They had like a patchy streak and he said, you know, actually, I'm excited that we're having a losing streak now because that's how you learn. Like you learn what doesn't work about your system and about your strategies and then you build from that. It's better to have, I think, winning teams like if you're going, the reason that people who win or teams that win the President's Trophy never win the cup. I believe in that curse, but I think it's actually like logical in that if you play your best play is saved for the regular season, you're not going to have any gas left by the time you get to the playoffs. And also, if you're perfect all year and never face adversity, how are you supposed to know how to adapt on the fly when you're in the playoffs and oh no, our power play is growing stale because this team has kind of cracked how to defend against it. So Habs probably not as look, they came out of the gate swinging. You got to be happy about that. And they're just like, I love it because they arrived on the scene. You know, everyone's been debating for years when are the Habs going to take over? When is it going to be their time? Because it's just been this kind of like, all right, we're building. And they just showed up and they're like, hi, we're here and we're annoying and we're going to bother you for the next 10 years. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. What's real frustrating about the Habs here is that they're so good and they're losing so much. Is we watch these games and it's, they don't get dominated. They don't get beaten for 60 minutes straight. They just can't play for 60 minutes. They're the worst second period team in the NHL and it's not particularly close anymore. It was close about a week and a half ago. It's not close anymore. They are the worst second period team in the NHL. Maybe their games are going to be an allegory for the season here. You know, they come out real strong in the first. They absolutely crap the bed in the second, and they'll finish. Maybe they'll finish in the third. But at the end of the day, you need to be able to play 60 minutes. And I agree, a team needs to learn how to lose. It's important to learn how to lose and how to bounce back from a loss. But it doesn't really matter if you know how to lose if you don't make the playoffs in the first place. And that's
they're not in danger of missing the playoffs.
I'll take the defeatist mentality for episode one.
Okay. Your Habs are not missing the playoffs. Get out of here with that.
No, but the Leafs certainly are.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah.
The Leafs suck.
The Leafs, yeah.
Are you allowed to say that?
Are we allowed to in Montreal? Yes, I think that it's required. I think that's actually part of our CanCon, you know, stats. Like, no, the Leafs are. Yeah, Mitch Marner leaving was bad. Like we said, it would be.
Worse than I thought it would be.
I knew it was going to be this bad.
They took his best friend.
They took Austin Matthews' best friend. But it's more than that too. It's that you know everyone for years is saying Marner is the problem there. And it's like, he's the load-bearing pillar in a home that if you remove, you think it does nothing, but now your house is sinking into the ground, unfortunately. You're having to make up for the loss of a 100-point player, and you're someone who had, like, the best chemistry with your top star. So obviously they were going to go through natural growing pains at this point because they just have to, you know, they're shuffling all the lines. You know, we have to figure out how to fit Nick Waugh in now. You know, the trade is one for one Mitch Marner, Nick Waugh. Yes, that, yeah. My favorite things are lobster and Skittles. That makes sense. Wow.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. I, as you can tell, I have strong emotions about this. But the thing that bothers me the most, though, is that the way that, I mean, Toronto media is always, it operates like a soap opera. It's, the Leafs are drama, you know, we all know this. But it does bother me that everyone's being like, who would have thought Mitch Marner leaving would have had an impact? No, it's been bad. Tanev's out right now with injury, Chris Tanev.
Which is kind of the entire decor now. Defensively, at least.
I would not say that. I would say that it kind of like, it's like the force flows through him sort of situation. Because last season they had, I was like, oh my God, the Leafs learned how to play defense. I never thought I'd see the day.
No, they acquired Brandon Tanev.
Chris Tanev, not Chris Brandon. Tanev. Yeah. They acquired Tanev, but also Oliver Ekman-Larsson. They got good OEL. Do you know how rare it is to get good OEL? Holy cow. But yeah, they... Their defensive core has been definitely seen better days. And I think that what Tanev is really good at is offsetting Morgan Rielly's job. I have had a lot of strong feelings about Morgan Rielly for a long time because, you know, he tends to play more of an offensive game. But then they put all of the defense on him because he's consistently been their only competent defender. And when Tanev showed up, it was like, okay, that gritty defensive backbone comes in, he can focus more on his game. So then, you know, they balance each other in that sense. Unfortunately, without him, Rielly has to pick up a lot of the slack. And Rielly's been good. He's been good the past couple games. But it's just not, they don't, it's like when you, it's like linchpin theory. It's like you take out Marner, forward lines crumble, you take out Tanev, defensive pairs crumble. So now they're all talking about, you know, Berube's job, his tenure's looking, it's about to end apparently, which I don't, is that the solution? I don't think so.
How many coaches can this core go through?
No, it's not.
I'm sorry.
No.
Berube's what, coach number four of the Matthews era? At some point, coaching is not. It's either three or four. I'm pulling it off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think
head.
He's third. Yeah, because it was Babcock, Keefe, and him.
It's not coaching. I'm sorry, it's not coaching. You listen,
the New Jersey Devils
are the soft players coach that didn't work, and now Sheldon Keefe is doing a great job in New Jersey.
Yeah.
So you got the hard nose classic. You went back to the torts kind of guy. That's not working either. And I don't even see the Leafs as having a strong physical identity like you would assume they would under Craig Berube. They look like the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's what they look like.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think that we don't often consider how much like having a cohesive identity, even off the ice, even just like interpersonally, like having a group solidified and like, this is our vibe. This is, you know, this is how we celebrate after games, or this is what we're doing in the locker room in between periods or something like that. How much that can impact a team's morale overall and how that morale then contributes to their playing styles. Like if you don't have if you don't have like a group off the ice that is a unit that believes in each other, how are you supposed to believe in each other on the ice? And I think that's a big significant thing. They just don't look like, it's not even like, I don't want to ever say that players are being lazy or they are phoning it in, because that is something that gets said time and time again on shows like this, and I don't think it's accurate, and I think it's lazy analysis. However, I do think that there is a sense of disillusionment with this core. I think they're... It's interesting because they're not talking about blowing up the team necessarily. Like, I've heard still that they are... Like, Friedman's talked about core is safe, you know, like I think Rielly's been dropped from that core. I think Nyes has taken his place now. So, you know, Tavares, Nyes, Nylander, Matthews, they're not getting moved anywhere really, but they're looking at options at this point. And I just, I find it interesting that they are not panicking, but you know who is panicking and ready to, you know, fire sale in BC? The Vancouver Canucks are apparently ready to blow up the whole team. I mean, I'm just hearing about this for the first time this weekend. Apparently, Quinn Hughes is no longer going to be a Vancouver Canuck. That's fascinating that you would go that far that quickly. It's been 5 minutes. You're going to give up Quinn Hughes because you had 5 minutes of a bad start to the season? Like,
yeah, I think the worry there is Quinn Hughes wants to play with his brothers.
I don't know if that's as true as people say it is.
I don't know, man. It would be... historical. It would be extremely cool.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he also wants to play in the U.S. This could be part of that, right? Is that maybe he doesn't want to be in Canada. He's not a Canadian player.
I don't know if it's necessarily that. I don't know if it's like he would rather play in the U.S. because Hughes doesn't strike me as someone who's like particularly miffed about the increased taxes or anything like that.
Hughes doesn't seem like a guy who has a lot of opinions about anything, really. He just seems like books, he kind of takes it as he goes.
Books, apparently. But
you've said that. He's got an impressive
shelf. He has a very impressive collection. Lots of, I think there was a Leonard Cohen one on that shelf that I saw.
Never mind. Quinn Hughes is the best player in the NHL. I think the Habs should acquire him. There'd be no reason why he wouldn't want to be in Canada. I take it all back.
See how it is. I don't necessarily think it's him not wanting to be in Canada. I think he just doesn't want to play for a dumpster fire. I don't even think he's like that pressed about like, oh, I don't have my cup yet or whatever. Because he's, I believe, 25. He's my age. And I don't see him in the McDavid situation of like, I need one in like 2 or 3 years. He knows that's not happening in Vancouver. I think he just doesn't want to. He knows that he's a generational talent. Like, he knows his worth. And I think that he just doesn't want to be mismanaged repeatedly. I mean, the Aquilinis have run the Canucks in a very interesting manner, I will say that, for the past couple decades. And I just think that's the issue. It comes down to just poor management is what's driving him out. Is that, I'm sorry, if you have this kind of roster composed, this kind of talent, you have a season like you did, that weird breakout year they had, like in 23-24. Like, if you have that, how do you go to, we're now getting rid of the generational talent? Like, that is not a team playing poorly. That is not locker room issues causing that. That is the fact that Jim Rutherford can't close his mouth, and he will just call Brock Besser, say Brock Besser's washed to the press. They will, you know, not deal with an HR issue to the point where the media makes it a circus, and then they have to trade away JT Miller, who they literally just gave up Bo Horvat to keep. And Hughes was close with Horvat. All of them were. That was a very like important figure when they were coming up. And so to have such a sudden turnover, and then also the issue right now is there's no path in sight for how to fix this. They already brought on Adam Foote to like, you know, appease Hughes because he'd been in the system before. He was working as an assistant, I believe. And they were like, okay, well, maybe Quinn will be happy with this new coach now that Tockett's left. But it's not doing enough, because also there's a roster issue too of the Canucks bought in on Miller and Tockett at the same time on that style, and they literally traded away a lot of guys who couldn't fit under the Tockett system, like Pia Suter, like Andre Kuzmenko. They got rid of those guys. Which guys are doing really well now on the teams that they just signed really expensive contracts with? Take a look at Pia Suter's stats. It's basically like if you put all your eggs in one basket and construct your team to fit this coach, then the coach leaves, you're now left with a very disorganized band of players who no longer have a cohesive identity and also probably aren't meshing super well together under new systems imposed. So,
well, you put all your eggs in one basket, then you ran it over with a truck.
Yeah, basically. That's par for the course for Vancouver. And trust, look, I say this with love. I'm a fan of the New York Rangers. That's the same team in a different font. Yeah. Same team in different font. We love talking. I feel like I understand why they're talking about trading Sherwood now. I think that is definitely, like, if you're not doing anything in the playoffs this year, get rid of that guy. Because that guy is, I don't know how much longer he's going to be doing this kind of level of play. And you want him to do that somewhere where it actually means something.
He checks all of the boxes we look for a flash in the pan. Absolutely. Yes.
Yes. It's not like a full flash in the pan. Like, he led the league in hits last season. He's already back at the top this year.
Oh, yeah. He'll keep doing that.
He's pretty – he is a very consistent player. I've watched him since he first started up in Nashville, and I was always really impressed with him. And I think that – I don't think it's going to be like necessarily one hit wonder sort of thing. Like, it's not like in a year, like 3 years, he'll be completely, you know, garbage. But I do think that you have to send players places where they have an impact. And I, you know, I don't think Sherwood's necessarily wanting a trade. I think he's quite happy there.
Sherwood does not want to change a single variable in his game right now. There's no way. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, you pull on one thread of the sweater and the whole thing unravels.
The whole thing goes. Yeah. He is the most one-dimensional player in the league, and it's not close.
I don't think he's one-dimensional.
He shoots and he hits. Maybe two dimensions, I suppose. But he is a 30-goal scorer who's going to lay the body five times a game. That is his entire identity right now.
The difficulty with moving him is I just wonder, like, first of all, everyone's going to be falling over themselves trying to get him. I heard Philly, you know, like, which honestly, oh gosh, I think Tocchet would be very happy to have him back. Oh my God. And I just thinking about, like, you know, does a team like, I don't know, the Oilers are always just picking up random people. Why is Jack Roslovic an Edmonton Oiler? I don't know. But he's good, apparently. It'll be interesting to see if he goes to more of a contender, a playoff contending team, or if it's like a team like Philly where it's like, we're getting you for a long, where we want you to be a part of this next stage of things. And there's a longer term vision there. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that he presents an opportunity for a few teams, especially if Vancouver's looking to move him. With the injuries to playoff teams right now, I think that a lot of teams could use 30 goals and a bunch of hits on the wing right now, including the Habs and the Leafs, who we just talked about, actually.
Yeah.
Pretty much every team.
And the Rangers. And, yeah. Yeah. My the first place my brain jumped to is the Seattle Kraken, because they have taken a big step this year, in my opinion. I think they have a really, like, you know, Lane Lambert's come in, I think, being one of the first coaches they've had in a while who's believed in them, and they're trying to, like, take this seriously. So, and I think that someone like Sherwood really fits in with that kind of, like, the, you know, it's inspired by Yanni Gourde, but the Kraken's, like, get under your skin, scrappy mentality. And the thing that they need the most is goal scoring. They need that the most. And the Kraken have, like, five first-round picks in the next couple of years.
Yes,
so, you know, I'm thinking maybe if it's not – if no, like, playoff teams are ready to overpay a ridiculous sum of money for Kiefer Sherwood, I think somewhere like Seattle might be a really good spot for him.
And luckily Seattle is still new enough that they don't have to worry about the rivalry, because at some point Vancouver and Seattle will not be able to make trades, just like the Habs and the Leafs, and the Habs and the Bruins will never make trades.
Well, it's like the Flames and anyone, from what I've noticed, basically. Any Canadian team?
Check the Flames making a trade with the Oilers. Yeah, that's definitely going to happen, right?
Oh, yeah. That's what's so funny to me is that I'm trying to, like, I love to predict when it, like, what's going to happen at the deadline this year. Deadline season's my favorite time of year because it's pure camp and drama and theater. But I always try to figure out, you know, who are these pieces that are going to get moved around. And, I think I have no idea, because the main team right now is probably the Flames that would move stuff. None of the Canadian teams are going to get any offers from them. And we got an ad break coming up for you right here. You're listening to North South Hockey on CGLO 1690 AM.
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome.
Hey, radio listeners. Have you ever wondered what your favorite characters would listen to? Better yet, imagined a soundtrack for your favorite movie or book? If the answer is yes, then tune into Something for the Mood every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. only on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm your host, Zoe, and I invite you to explore a new topic with me through music both new and old, but always funky, each week. To quote the wise words of iconic duo Chibo Motto, you got to know your chicken. And if you do, you'll tune into Something for the Mood every week. See you all there.
You're listening to North South Hockey on CJLO 1690 AM. So we're going to get into who's impressed us in the past couple days with some three stars of the week. Who are your stars? Who's catching your eye?
Yeah, I feel like I should clarify it first. I'm looking a week from yesterday.
Yeah,
right. We're doing this on Wednesdays. Might as well make it a week to the show. There is a couple of players that I want to point out. obviously the top three scorers, Nathan MacKinnon, Artemi Panarin, we know these names. Luke Evangelista.
Oh, yeah.
I know Let's talk about this player.
Yes.
I know you love this player. 2 goals, 5 assists in his last 4 games. And Luke Evangelista is actually a good friend of a good friend of mine.
Oh, really?
That camp is going crazy right now. Let me tell you. They are over the moon. This kid is playing his butt off. And I'm going to turn it over to you. Talk about Luke Evangelista here.
Oh, well, I'm scrambling to pull up his stats to make sure I have something to go off of. I guess facts I have about Luke Evangelista off the top of my head, he won Most Beautiful Person in Nashville this summer.
Did he? Seriously?
Yeah, so a local newspaper awarded him such an award, which is crazy when Roman Josi is in the same city.
I don't want to say that I was thinking about that, but he is not the most attractive guy on the team.
The Predators are a bunch of beautiful failures. That's my kind of diagnosis of them. You know, like it's really tragic. It's really tragic that you have that kind of star power.
The Predators are a Greek tragedy.
Yes. Oh, that's talk about Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the hill. That's Barry Trotz going into work every day. Like, oh my God. Luke Evangelista is, he's one of those guys, like, I'm really happy that he is doing so well because he's kind of like a Nick Robertson type is my comparison as like a Leafs enjoyer, but just one of those guys who doesn't really get enough ice time, doesn't really get enough credit. When the team is bad, he's kind of getting, you know, shunted to the side when it's not his fault necessarily, and he's trying his best. There were trade rumors because he had his, RFA negotiations extended past training camp. And there was, talks of him, maybe he could need a change of scenery, yeah. Maybe he needs to go elsewhere. So I'm glad that he's doing well in Nashville, because do you know how hard it is to, well, actually, maybe it's pretty easy to do well in Nashville, considering what your comparisons are there. But yeah, no, that's good to hear. I think he is, I don't even know what type of player he will be, because it's unfortunate to come up on a team that really, it's not just that the Predators are bad, it's that they have no idea what they're doing.
The Predators don't have an identity. No.
Not even no identity. Like, I don't even know if they have like the keys to the rink anymore. Like, it's weird to see a team failing that bad and to see management still have like such a trust in them. It's the curse of signing people like Marchessault and Stamkos. And Ryan O'Reilly is a big part of that team too. You can't tell them we want you out. We're shipping you off because you're gonna tell Steven Stamkos to get out of your city. Oh my God!
Again?
Well, yeah. Mm. It's easier for some, I guess. But yeah, so Luke Evangelista doing very well. I wanted to shout out Norris candidate Darren Radish because he's been doing absolutely amazing for the Lightning. Hedman and McDonough have been out with injuries repeatedly over the past few years, honestly. I mean, they're old. They're getting there.
They're done, yeah.
Yeah.
Radish is running power play one on the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yes.
Remember, guys, the Tampa Bay Lightning's power play one over the last 10 years is the best power play in the NHL, period. And it is now being run successfully by Darren Radish.
I think something the Lightning are really, really good at is inspiring each other, I would say. They basically, I think a lot of they have a lot of players who would not strike you upon looking at the roster, but Radish is the kind of guy who plays to the level he's asked to, I think. And, he's worked with Hedman now for a while. And, like, I think he really takes that guidance to heart. I think, he knows the amount of responsibility that's being shoved onto his shoulders as the Lightning continue to be the gum under everyone's shoe that will not leave. They are going to be around with the cockroaches after the nuclear winter. Always watch out for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Darren Radish has 16 points and a +1 in 20 games played. Darren Radish, yes. That guy, egghead. I think that the Lightning, everyone keeps saying like, oh, the Lightning are in contention. They're like, don't count them out. I don't know if they are.
Oh, with the Leafs being that bad, there'll be a wild card spot open for the Lightning, probably.
Yeah, by default, they win. They get into the playoffs on a technicality of Toronto being dog trash. Nico Heischer's also been doing really well after Hughes is out with injury. And I want to shout out my star. This is, you know, we said three stars of the week. I think we've already gone over that, but I do want to shout out the entire Anaheim Ducks roster. Those are my boys, my stars. Ducks are first in the Pacific Division. Yeah. They've not had the best week. They are 5-5 in their last 10, but they are.
Leo Carlson had a great week, though.
Yes, he did. And the whole team, they're 16-9-1 on the season. They have the second most goals for per games played. They are. I love this.
How did we let this happen?
Look, I have to say, I love this season because it's like I said with the Habs, they showed up and they said, hi, we're here, we're annoying. About four other teams did that. Like the Hawks are doing that. The Ducks are doing that. And then, of course, you get everyone complaining, oh, there's too much parity in the league. Everyone's too good. And to me, it's not that.
Those are just the Leafs and the Rangers fans.
Yes, exactly. It's that the teams that were good, we're having a changing of the guards. The teams that were good are now getting worse, and the teams that were bad are now getting better. And that switchover is going to have a little bit of crossover there. But I think the Ducks are the most exciting team to watch right now in hockey. I will say it's not necessarily fun to see a lot of graphics on these broadcasts comparing Joel Quenneville to Scotty Bowman. Because you got to think, you got to really sit with. I saw that was on the Ducks broadcast the other night. Will is shocked at this.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Oh no!
Habs fan, how do you feel about that? Oh. Joel Quenneville, the next Scotty Bowman, when John Cooper's standing right there.
It sounds like hockey Twitter made that decision.
Yeah. No.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but no, I'm a de facto Ducks fan as two New York Rangers are now on that team. So we're gonna close out here with a little bit of talking about some stuff off the ice, some hockey culture stuff, because that's my purview, that's my background. The biggest piece of news right now in terms of hockey culture is Crave's Heated Rivalry. It's a new TV series directed by Jacob Tierney, who made Letterkenny and Shoresy, and it is based off of the best-selling hockey romance books by Rachel Reed, and it's kind of taken over the conversation in a way that I didn't expect it to, at least in traditional circles. I'm around gay freaks in the hockey community all the time. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on radio. I freaks in the most benevolent, like, knitting, you know, at the function kind of way, and people have been so excited for this for months now, but like pundits are talking about it. It's becoming a real thing. You know, HBO picked it up. It's now in the States too. And a lot of people who have never once thought about hockey before in their lives are watching this as an entry point. And so I'm interested to see if this ends up growing the game at all. What do you think? I forced Will to watch this.
It was partly a volunteer, maybe a voluntold. this story's above the fold in the hockey world right now, right? Like, this has broken into mainstream. Everyone is talking about this. I recommend that, you know, yeah, if you're in the hockey world, give it a watch. Stay up to date. I'm not going to tell you that it's a show about hockey.
It's not.
It's not.
It's not
about hockey. It just so happens that hockey is the world that this story takes place in.
Yeah, so it follows, like, two fictional hockey players. They're supposed to be, it's basically NHL players, but they don't, you know, wink, wink.
You can watch the show and you can probably guess what they're trying to say, but we're not going to say it.
You can guess the comparables. We'll say that, maybe. But it follows these two players, Shane Hollander and Ilya Rozanov, as they begin their careers and end up. It's a queer romance story. And the show is very sexually explicit. It is mostly smut, if we're allowed to say that on radio. And it's so, you know, don't go in thinking that you're going to watch.
It's not Shoresy, guys.
No. It's very much like hockey. Like hockey is a setting in this.
Hockey is the means to the end.
Hockey is a means to an end. I have to say, though, I'm so happy to see this show take off because I think, in a way, it is bringing about a lot of conversations that we may not have had otherwise. I don't think it's profound media by any stretch of the imagination. You know, like, I'm not sitting here like, oh my god, this is like the greatest thing since the Russian Five Doc or something like that. Like, it's fun. It's supposed to be, like, you know, non-serious. But at the same time, it does start serious conversations, you know, because a lot of teams in the NHL canceled Pride Night this year. There's been the Pride tape bans that, like, in a couple seasons ago that was really testy. And as of today, there are no out gay hockey players in the NHL. There's Luke Prokop, who's under contract with the Nashville Predators, but he's never cracked past the A, and he's usually in the ECHL. Diversity win. Hockey defensemen who are gay can be mid two. We can suck at sports. Don't worry. Oh my God. But no, it's I think it's starting to raise the conversation about, hey, why are there no out players in the NHL? Why is this show so shocking to see, I think, for traditional audiences? And it just, you know, brings this to the forefront. And you got a bunch of traditional pundits breaking down a gay romance show. Never thought I'd see the day.
I've been watching boring straight hockey pundits for my entire life, and I was concerned when I heard that they were all going to be talking about this. But I was pleasantly surprised to see that most of the discourse around this is fairly above board here and respectful. I'm not a very online person, so if Twitter might be different, Instagram might be different, I can't really speak to that. I'm not really in those worlds. But the internet's terrible no matter what. So I feel like I don't want to give that too much weight anyway. What I would really love to see in this show in regards to growing the game is the culture side of things, right? We're two episodes in and we don't necessarily have a whole lot of interaction between teammates here in the locker room, right? This is kind of the big part of this, is what is it like to be different, to be a minority in this world? And I don't know if they've explored that yet.
I do believe they're going to these release, I believe, on like Thursdays. I do believe the next episode is getting into that a little bit more with Canadian cinema legend Francois Arnaud is in this show.
Francois Arnaud is in this show.
You watched it. He's Scott Hunter. He's that other guy. Is. Yeah, that's him. And so I think the episode this week is going to focus on him and more about like what the actual culture stuff is like in that sense and what he's experienced. Because it's a series of books and it's basically like the everyone in the NHL is gay universe. So we could get a lot of material out of this. But you're right. No, there's a little lack of team camaraderie there. But if you guys do want to see inside the locker room, some fun news yesterday came out that The Road to the Winter Classic is coming back. It's a docuseries that was on HBO back in the day.
Back in the day.
Yeah, when I was like a kid. I don't want to say.
This is childhood media. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. Yes. I very vividly remember being like, I don't want to say how old, and watching John Tortorella rip my team a new one. But it's returning as the Florida Panthers and the New York Rangers prepare for the outdoor game in Miami this January. How do you feel about that as a Canadian? Does that really grind your gears? Are you losing it?
I don't want to have a single conversation about the Winter Classic.
This is why I brought it up at the end, because I knew there would be strong feelings.
I can't get into the Winter Classic. What the NHL, listen, grow the game. I'm for growing the game. I'm not the Canadian hockey fan who is completely anti-hockey and warm climates. I've made the joke a couple of times, but I don't have a problem with there being teams where there isn't ice. I do have a problem with us hosting outdoor events where there's no ice. There's levels to this.
What's the carbon footprint on that rink, by the way? I love to know. How much energy does it take? But anyway.
Not as much as a Taylor Swift tour. That's at least that.
Yep, at least. God.
Oh, that was an unfair stray.
A little jig right there at the end. All right.
It's an unfair stray.
Well, Road to the Winter Classic will premiere on Wednesday, December 10th on TNT in the U.S. and Sportsnet in Canada, if anyone's interested in watching that. And yeah, so thank you guys for sticking around in here in our first episode. They appreciate you bearing through some of the technical issues. I've been Avery Beaumont, and you've been?
And I'm Will Shukri.
And we will be back next Wednesday to unpack more of what's been going on in hockey. Wednesdays at noon, North South Hockey on CJLO 1690. Clock it. I don't know. Is that the
clock
slogan?
It, folks. Clock it. Yeah. Clock it.
I'm trying to introduce him to some gay slang, slowly but surely.
Oh, guys, I didn't even realize that was gay slang.
You'll learn it the more you know, reading Rainbow.
You guys have a great day. We will see you next Wednesday at noon. Thank you very much.
You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM.